supporting you in your dog parenting journey. The Dynamic Dog Owner with Debbie Potter. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Dynamic Dog Owner. Today we are joined by a guest, Edward Richens, who is a will writer of ADE Wills. So obviously, as you know, if you are a regular listener, we talk about all things dog, even the things that may not crop up in your general dog training life. So we've talked in previous episodes about what happens when sadly we say goodbye to a pet. Today we're going to talk about or find out a little bit more about what happens if we leave the world, if we die before our dog does, and what provisions, etc., what we can include in our wills to make sure that our dog is well cared for. And that is where Edward is going to help us, because it's not a topic I know much about to start with. So firstly, welcome, Edward. Thank you for joining us.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's going to be fabulous. So tell us a little bit about yourself. So you, your background, how did you get into being a will writer?
Yeah, of course. So started out in law from a young age. Really loved the sort of area of it all. I've got a family background in there. And then started studying it in Oxford Brookes. Then went on to trying to become a solicitor. Trainee solicitor was where I was at. And then 6 months before I qualified as a solicitor, I was moving law firms. And at that point, lockdown happened and scuppered it. So in that case, I moved to Oxford. And restarted the whole life journey. And that's when I thought, do you know what? I love law and I just want to help people in. And at the time, COVID was at the forefront of everyone's minds, illness, deaths, all those kind of things. And I thought, how can I merge the two? Will writing allow people that peace of mind and lasting powers of attorneys? So created ADE Wills in Oxford. And then I've moved back to Bucks now in Aylesbury. So now we're just looking after people's wills and creating them and giving advice as much as possible and just making people aware of what we can do in wills, such as looking after pets, which not many
Amazing.
People are aware of.
So you're an independent will writer?
Yes,
I
am.
You're not part of a law firm?
Yeah, the Society of Will Writers. So I'm a professional member of the Society of Will Writers. They're fantastic. I can't credit them enough. Their technical team is just insanely good. They just look after everything and any question you've got, anything, if you can just try and broaden your horizons of knowledge, they've got everything, they'll look after you. So yeah, it's a fantastic society to be a member of, and I'm really privileged to have this kind of will writer journey, really.
Amazing. And it sounds quite you say a nice journey with how COVID kind of, everyone always sees COVID as being quite a negative, and obviously it was for many people and it was in many ways, but I think also a lot of positivity came out of COVID. A lot of people made new choices of life and found new ways of working. So for you, it sounds like it was quite a positive outcome of discovering that you were going to be a will writer.
Yeah, it is. And it allowed for the business model as well to sort of formulate itself, because at that stage beforehand, it was all about office jobs and meeting in the office. Mm. But now more sort of accommodating to welcoming you in for home visits or just doing Zoom calls. And remember, you could be more flexible and just offer that sort of legal advice and help from, say, the comfort of your own home or in the comfort of your client's home. So yeah, it was trying to make the best of a bad situation, really.
Amazing. That's really interesting. So obviously, most people, I don't know, what percentage of people actually have a will? Are there stats on that? Do most people have a will, or is it?
I think the last time I checked was around the 50% mark. So it's quite low. I think really? It was the UK adult population. It was last time I checked around 50. Some sources said up to 60, but I think most of them said it was around the 50% mark. So it's quite low when you really think about it.
It is quite low. That surprises me. I thought it would be higher. Yeah, I thought it would be a lot higher. I suppose it's most people's prompt to have a will is obviously if they have a lot of assets to distribute, if they've got children. Yeah. I suppose though you don't fall into those categories, you probably don't think about writing a will.
It is, and it's quite sad, because you get a lot of people who do fall into those categories who just don't either. They've got a will, they buy a house, they get the will done, and then they say to me, oh, we made a will 5-10 years ago. I check it and I say, no, it's made 30 years ago. And then like, oh, is it that long ago? People get prompted, but then forget to update it. And then, of course, as you say, people do have reasons for having a will. Kids, divorces, marriages, family changes, babies, having kids or having dogs or just moving house, but then they never get a will in place because they never think about it, or life just gets in the way and that goes to the bottom of their list. So
absolutely, life does get in the way. And you say easily, you think, oh, it's only been a couple of months. No, it's been 2 years. So I can quite understand that. I think my will was updated about 10 years ago, so I probably need to do mine too. However, I do know I do have provision for my dogs in my will, or I did at the time. It's changed probably because at the time I only had one dog, and I'm sure the person who was bequeathed that one dog does not want all three now. So will's probably definitely need to update mine. So first of all, can you actually put pets in your will? You know, how does it work? Is that a thing? You can put your pet in your will to leave your pet to somebody?
Yes, it is. It's actually often overlooked because when you're writing your will, of course, the main thing you're thinking of is like who to appoint as your guardians, looking after your children until they turn 18, or executors for managing the administration of your estate during the probate process, or trustees managing the property for anyone who's a vulnerable beneficiary, or a child, for example, and trying to look after that property until they're old enough. But of course, what people either often overlook or are not unknown of is the fact that you can actually make provision for pets. You can make gifts off them to certain people. You can actually make trusts in their benefits. So it is a crucial part of your family as well as part of your estate to look after your pets in your wills. And it is something that we can do.
Amazing. So what options are there? What can you leave? Who can you leave your dog to? What can you leave your dog? Can you leave your dog things? What are the options? I mean, who knows? People might want to leave their like prized possessions to their dog. I mean, if you've got no family members, that is perfectly plausible. You might want to leave them the house to live in. I don't know. What are the options? What can you do and what can't you do?
Yeah, I do like reading those cases when you see people leaving everything to the dog, because, and then you get someone who's trying to claim saying like, my mum should have left everything to the Rottweiler. And it's just like, there's not much you can do, but they are funny. But I think the main ones that we really discuss with clients is one is you can make a gift of your dogs to a family, a relative or a friend. You can leave them to a charity of your choice, whether it be a charity that you're close to and they've been working with you during the course of your time of looking after your dog. Or it could be a charity that is a national one that you just know will do a good job for you. But you can also make create a trust in favour of your dogs as well. So those are the three main options that we like to discuss with clients and work with them to put into place.
Okay. So you can nominate any person to have your dog. Do you have to check with them first that you've actually put that down?
Yes, I would definitely consider it. If you're going down the route of, say, the three options, say, for example, you go down the route of friend or relative, starting with that one, the factors to consider when looking at them for a best candidate would be, one is age. So if you've got a puppy, so I've got a baby puppy, his name's Cookie, mini Yorkie Terrier, and he takes a lot of time and energy. So if you're going to pick someone who's, say, for example, a little bit older, that's a lot of energy from Cookie to have to manage day-to-day basis. And of course, you're trying to think about the attention and observation, as well as also the walks involved. Living circumstances. So if, say, for example, the person you're choosing lives in a house with a garden, that's good. But if they live in, say, for example, the geographical side, if they live in the middle of like central London and you've got like a border collie who needs to be running his heart's consent all day, every day, and the closest field is like an hour away on the tube, say, for example.
Probably not a good option.
Yeah. And that's something to consider as well when you're thinking about who is a good person to look after your dog. And of course, the big question is the financial element, which is if, say, for example, they can afford to look after your dog. So you're looking at, for example, your vet's bills, emergency bills, insurance. Do they have the finances to look after them? And so these are big things to consider. And you'll always want to ask your person in question, are you willing to look after the dog? And if they say no up front, you can make that decision, okay, well, you know, someone else then. But even if they say yes, life circumstances change and they can always change their mind. And if so, what you always want to do is have a backup. So a substitute beneficiary, one or two, I always advise. So that way, should anything happen, you've always got the backup there. So that's a biggie. And if you're going down the charity route, what you'd want to do is, of course, you can't talk to the charity directly, maybe, but what you can do is you can talk to them and say what plans or what procedures need to be fulfilled in order to look after the dog. So we have one client, she's got a lovely little thing, it's a Rottweiler called Molly. And so we made a gift of Molly to Blue Cross. They have a was a Pets Peace of Mind service where if you are looking to look after your dog, they rehome them and they look after the dog in the meantime. But of course, in order for that to be able to happen, you need to set up your membership with them, and then you've got to have the number in place. And what we did is we set that all up, took the details, put them in the will, because of course our executives won't know our days to days in and out. So when they look through the will, they'll see that information and go, oh right, Molly's with the Blue Cross. So what they do is they then get the details, talk to Blue Cross, and then Molly can then go over to the charity and be rehomed. So not only is it important to talk to the charity and see what needs to be done, but putting it in your will is something that we do essentially because we want to have that clarity that the process needs to be followed. So yeah.
Oh, amazing. That's really interesting. I suppose, yeah, backups are probably a really good thing. And I suppose one other thing is mention, you know, the person's age. You know, we've mentioned obviously the dog being quite young and their energy level, but equally if you're leaving your dog to an older person, then obviously you may outlive them and then you've got nobody backed up. So hadn't thought of backups. That's a really good point. So how about leaving them money? Can you leave money to your dog? Can you leave possessions to your dog?
Yeah, there are a few good ways of doing this. So the first one is, say, for example, you go down the route of choosing a family or relative. What you can do is you can leave a set X amount of pounds to that family, relative or friend, but you can make a conditional on them taking on your dog and looking after them. Because you might be scared that you just give them, like, say, 50 grand and they just take the money but don't look after the dog. But of course, making it conditional means that, you know, they have got a little bit of strings attached. So it is good to have that condition imposed in the will. And then the other side of the coin is, of course, if you go down the route of having a trust in place. So why I've always found pets interesting in wills is because, as we were discussing previously, pets are property. So in the eyes of the law, our fur seen as property, as much as like a car, for example. But what is good is there is a beneficiary principle in our jurisdiction where you don't have a valid trust unless you have a beneficiary in place, specified beneficiaries, unless it's solely for charitable purposes. There are two exemptions, and one of them is trusts for the benefit of maintenance of specific animals. So in our case, that's a relevance because if, say, for example, you've got a pet like a dog, then you can make a trust maximum of 21 years period where you're looking after the money's there for the availability of the dog's benefit, make looking after them. And that's really useful for dogs because of their usual life expectancy, maybe of 18 years in some cases. 21 years means that is the duration of their life. And you can have money in there. You can choose trustees who you know will look after the dog. You can have a letter of wishes, which is not a legal document, but accompanies the will, and it provides information like guidance on how best to look after your dog or what your dog needs and how to use that money for the dog. And it will be with the trust, so it gives a little bit of like backup information. And it's useful because, say, for example, the dog passes away or trust period ends and there's still cash hanging about in the trust period, in the trust pot, you can then say in the trust who that goes to. So it can go to a charity, it could go to your other loved ones, so you don't need to totally remove your loved ones. You can still look after them and your dog, or it can go right into your residuary estate. There is flexibility to it.
And does that same thing work? And if you were putting them to, you know, if you were bequeathing them to a charity and saying, "I want the charity to look after my dog," can you send money with the charity so that the rehomed family, you know, whoever takes on the dog, then gets their trust as well? Is that possible?
I can look into that to see if it is.
Oh, tricked you, sorry.
No, definitely. I mean, I wouldn't like to say yes or no about knowing, but what I can do is I can talk to the tech team and then definitely see into that, because I understand that you can do it with having the individuals as trustees. When it comes to appointing, say, for example, charities, executive trustees, I know that, like, for example, the Blue Cross, on some of their lectures, they like to have been appointed as the executor. But speaking generally for charities, it might be difficult because they might have different instruments in place. You look into that and see if it is possible, because that would be useful. But what some clients do is if they, for example, go for the Home for Life scheme with RSPCA, what they can do is they can say give a donation to the charity as well, just so like £500 or £50,000, however much you want to give, but you can make a donation to the charity and they can always look after the dog for you in the scheme itself.
It's really interesting to say it's all these little things you don't think of, isn't it? How about if you don't have a dog? I know it sounds strange, but there's a portion of people that listen to our podcast who don't have a dog, but they're thinking of getting one in the future or just like to hear about what we talk about. Can you leave money just to the charity and specify a charity you want to leave money to?
Yeah, of course, definitely. You can leave two main ways that you can do it is you can leave a specific lump sum of cash. So say, for example, you want to just give £500 or £100,000 to, say, RSPCA or Dogs Trust, any charity you wish. Even if you don't have a dog, you can just give to any charity that you wish. The other alternative is, so when we write wills, we have what's called the residuary estate. So each individual, whatever's remaining in our name, property assets-wise, after all our taxes, debts, liabilities, mortgages, anything else that's been paid off, whatever remains is called the residuary estate. And we make a catch-all provision, which is crucial in the will, so that whatever is remaining is passing over to, say, for example, a surviving spouse or our children in equal shares, and if not, our grandchildren. But you can always leave a percentage of that amount to a charity. And what's useful about that way of doing it is it's a percentage. So your residuary estate, we may be worth, say, for example, £100 one day, then £100,000 in 10 years' time. And if you give 10%, you're sort of allowing it to change in accordance with the fluctuating nature of your estate's value. And what's good about the tax side of it is if you do give money to a gift to a charity, it's exempt from inheritance tax. So
okay.
If you did give 10 grand to a charity, there's no inheritance tax on it. And I think it's if you give at least 10% of your net estate to a charity, then your inheritance tax liability, your tax rate drops from 40%, 40, to 36%. So there are tax benefits to giving to a charity in your will, which we talk through with clients as well.
That's interesting. I didn't know that. How interesting. There's all these things that we're learning. So are there any other ways that we can sort of include our dog in our will? Is there anything else that's kind of a bit unusual, a bit quirky that we wouldn't necessarily think of? Or are those the main parts?
Those are the main ones we talk through. What I remember back in the day was reading through some articles and some books, and I remember seeing somewhere you can do like euthanasia with pets, where you can actually have them. Say, for example, we've had clients where in the past they've said, for example, there's no one to look after, I don't trust anyone, the dog's only bonded with me, I want them to pass with me. And it's a bit controversial, so there's a lot of talking points about it, but it is a bit of a difficult one. I always go through the main three to avoid the euthanasia, because at the end of the day, the life can still go on for the dog and it can still be rehomed and loved as long as you do it in the right way. So that's a bit of a quirky one, but I do, because I remember you had a podcast episode with crematorium, and I did like the idea of the ones that you mentioned, where I thought it was really nice where when a dog passes away, you can have them put into, say, ornaments. And I really liked that idea. I loved that. So I think that's a nice way to do things. Having these main ways, gifting onto the life can continue for the dog, but making that provision, because at the end of the day, they're going to be grieving as well. And it's important for them to have that provision made for them, really. So whether it be a gift to someone you know will look after them, or a trust in their favour, or having a charity look after them and rehome them, I think that would be those are the best ways to do it.
I think for most dogs, absolutely. I think the only way the euthanasia option would be fairest is if the dog's elderly too. Because obviously if you've got an elderly person, save with their will, or you've got a 13-year-old dog who's likely to not be rehomed through a rescue society, I think that's the only way that I think sort of ethically I would agree with the euthanasia option. But it's interesting that can be added in, because as you say, you know, dogs are classed in the eyes of the law as property, which is always a bit of an odd point for me, because we know that they're not property and they have their own thoughts, feelings, emotions. But as you say, the law says they are an item of property that passes down. So have you ever had any weird requests relating to pets in wills, or any quirky suggestions of what people would like to do? Like, I'd like to leave my entire mansion to my Rottweiler.
I think it's always the, I've been quite lucky to have quite sensible clients who never really go with any quirky ones, to be honest. They always go quirky with everything else, like any other gifts. But when it comes to pets, they always laugh. Well, I always get about 20% of the time I get a laugh, like, I'm not looking to give my estate to my dog. And it's like, no, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking, do you want to make sure that your dog's looked after? Never I ask a question of, do you want to make provision for your dog? But no, I've generally had quite a nice mix, like with dogs. Tortoises has been a big one as well.
That's, well, of course, they live a very long time, so you would need to. Yes, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and they usually go to grandkids. And I thought that was really sweet, because it just goes through the generations. But no, I haven't had any really quirky ones about that. But yeah, when I do, I'll let you know, and we can feature on another episode.
Please do. It's interesting, because you know, we always talk about the fact that, you know, dogs are, you know, a very important person, member of the family. A lot of people probably prefer their dog to their spouse or their kids or whoever. Yeah, they probably wouldn't openly admit that, but I think a lot of people probably do. So it makes perfect sense that we would want to make provisions for them. And I suppose, yeah, every person, every dog's different.
It is. I think the usual setup I always get is we always get people saying, I want to leave the dog to the surviving spouse, both of them in their wills. And then they say, if not a surviving spouse, then it goes to the children. Or they might say, do you know what? Child specifically has bonded with this dog so much, it goes to that child. And so why I like it is because it means that whatever, God forbid, happens to the family, the dog now has got a carer at every stage through his life. So that's good to see that people are, when they find out, oh, you can make provision for dogs, let's try and see what we can do. And they just get involved and they just make a really good plan of action. And it's good to see. It's really nice.
Yeah, I suppose that's the thing, is, as you say, is making that, if, you know, case one, case two, case three, if this happens, that happens, you've got multiple options for what happens rather than just one of, I want this to happen. Yeah. And obviously, if there's a situation where it can't, you're then a bit stuck.
No, it's true. And I think one of the reality of it is, of course, is, for example, sometimes we get clients who just need a will urgently for some reason. Maybe it's ill health, or maybe it's because of a relationship change, because they're going through a divorce. Because another main thing to highlight is that marriage, but not divorce, revokes a will. So if you get married and you don't have an in contemplation clause in your will will be revoked by the making of the new will. And if you are going through a separation and you're not quite divorced yet, well, your will will still be valid until you are divorced, at which point it's still valid. It's just the law treats your ex-spouse as having died on the date of your divorce. So the will does need to be updated. And we get clients who say we need to update it. But when I talk about pets, they're like, it's not the forefront of the mind. But as you say, it's good to have substitutes. At the same time, it's good to be able to update your will with ease, which is why we have the legacy care plan, so that people are on the plan. And essentially what they do is they'll make a quick will. They have it on there. And then what happens is, as time goes on, they say, okay, the main reason for having the will's done, we've gone through the divorce, everything for my family's in place, now I want to make provision for my dog. And then it's like, if anything does happen to the people involved, or they say, do you know what, now I've got four dogs, not just one, I need to update my will, we keep on making those, we keep getting involved. And it's like, that's a minor amendment, we can do it. And every year we just get in contact saying, we can just even say, got any more dogs? And then it's just basically, keep on making those changes. So it's updated as much as having a sub.
And I think that's where your care plan comes in quite useful, because life changes a lot. And you do tend to see that people make their will and go where it's done and then forget about it for 10 years. But as we all know, in 10 years, a lot changes. You know, people coming into the family, leaving family, pets coming in and out, marriages changing, relationships changing. So it's good to be able to check in and keep it up to date. Because, say, there are so many things that change.
There are. We never know when they're going to happen. Like, sadly, I had one client who I made a will for, a really lovely lady, and then I think it was around the time she signed her will, she had one cat and specifically named it in the will, passed away for an operation. So then we had to then update the will now to try and get the new kitten that she's got. And it works in the same vein as dogs. We never know what's around the corner. So it's just good to be able to react. And I've always seen wills as being flexible. So people always think it's set in stone. It's a legacy. But at the time, our desire for what legacy we want to leave and the impact we want to leave on this world changes daily because of our life purpose and how we want to look after people. And as you say, who we want to look after always changes. So dogs are as part of the family as much as possible in my eyes. So they are just like kids. Even though Law sees them as property, we should always be able to look after them. And their needs change every day, which is why it's useful to always, even if it's as simple as just putting a letter of wishes in place, where we say these are the nutritional needs, these are the behavioural needs, these are the comfort. And then we have them in the letter of wishes because we have clients who do that for their kids, for their guardians. It's no different for pets. You know, like if you want to make sure they're going to be looked after, it's not just here's the dog, here's the money, look after them. It's what's his favorite toy? What's his favorite brand of food? Because I know Cookie's a very like fussy eater and he'll turn his nose up at some food, but he'll like certain food. And it's like if he's starting from scratch at an older age with a new person, it's going to hurt him. He's going to be missing the people he's just lost. And now he's trying to make a new pack. So now he's trying to do it. But if you just ease that process, then it allows it easy. That's why we
Really useful. Yeah. That's really useful. And I think that's something that most people wouldn't think about. I mean, I've not thought of that. You've definitely highlighted I need to update my will. because I think my, whether this may not even be like legally standing now, but mine just says, you know, whatever family dog we've got at the time basically goes wherever the kids go. So it doesn't name a dog. Whoever gets my kids gets my dogs too. I mean, they're going to love it. but maybe that's not even legally binding. I haven't named.
You can make class gifts. So say, for example, you've got one dog called, I don't know, Jerry. You can make a gift of my dog called Jerry to, and then specify the beneficiaries. But of course, you can say a class gift of all my pets that I own at the date of my death, or all the dogs I own at the date of my death. So you can encapsulate them. It's just, if say, for example, how it works is if you make that gift and you don't have any dogs on your death, then of course the gift just fails. You don't have the property anymore. So therefore the gift to that person doesn't exist anymore, can't be upheld. But if say, for example, the person who you're making that gift to does predecease you, then of course the gift fails because there's no one to give it to. So instead what happens is it's into your residuary estate, and the residuary estate might say that it goes to someone else and you don't want it to go to that person. So it's always good to have the backups. It's always good to update your will and review them. And it's always good to have letters to make sure we've got those specific details in there. And the useful thing about this letter of wishes is you don't need to get it witnessed every time. All you have to do is say, for example, one day you could just say, these are the good food. 6 months later, he likes all these foods now because he's changed his preferences. The letter of wishes is very easy to update and we can just change it bit here, bit there, sign it, store with the will. And it's just a very easy way of making sure, God forbid anything happens, your dog will be looked after the way you're looking after them by someone else you trust.
Well, that's really interesting. Really interesting. So obviously, if anyone's listening and they don't, hadn't even considered putting their dog in their will, which again, most people might not, dog nuts do, but most people probably haven't considered to even add their dog in. What would you advise they do if they've got a will? Would you advise them to go and check what it says about their pets or to start fresh? Because as we said, life changes. What would be the best thing going forward?
Going forward, I would definitely say have your will reviewed. So definitely talk to a professional will writer and say, in general, does it do everything I want it to do? Pets wise, what's going to happen to my dogs? And they will tell you, based on your current will, it might go this way, it might go that way. And you can look through and think, is that really what I want it to do? Is that still the people that I want to look after them? Have the needs of the dogs changed and it should be going somewhere else? I would definitely get it reviewed. And then if need be, I'll definitely get it updated. And if you're going to update a will, if it's a good few years old as well, especially, you would definitely want to do a fresh will. And I think that would be the best way to start, because you're starting afresh. It's not just for the pets as well as, of course, your estate assets. Even if the people in your will are still the same, your estate assets might have changed. Your house value might have gone up. You need to get the tax threshold might have changed in the meantime. You need to get that kind of advice going on, so you know exactly what's happening tax efficiently, practically, legally, and also for your pets. So I definitely say, if you've got provision or no provision, get your will reviewed, get it updated. And then once it's updated, think about, one, who you want to look after your pets. Two, asking them, even if it's a charity as well, making sure it's the procedure, something I need to do. Four, put it in the will. Like, I've got a plan with Blue Cross, or I've got a plan with RSPCA, or I give my dogs to these people, and have your substitutes. And then after that, of course, letter of wishes and some guidance, or creating the trust. And then maybe a year or two down the line, just check in, see if it's still doing what you need. Because dogs' lives change more rapidly than our lives, I find. Like, their life is like, what, about 7 years to a year for a dog?
On average, it depends. They use that analogy, yes, but it depends on the breed and the age. Right. So I think over the lifespan, 7 is roughly it. But the first few years, it's much higher. And then the end few years, it's much higher ratio. But yeah, roughly speaking, they say 7 to 1. But yeah, you think they've got to cram their whole life into 10 years, yeah, potentially. So yeah, it does change quickly.
Yeah, it's always good to react and just make sure the will's flexibly being seamlessly updated to modify changes. But yeah.
So if anyone wanted to get in touch with you about writing a will, seeing as you've told us so much about how to add pets in and make sure they're cared for, how would they best get in touch with you?
Yeah, definitely. We can calling in would be the best way. It's calling on our landline, so 01865 507 174. And then talking through with me, I'll talk through anything they would like to have been done, going through any questions, go through the process, and then booking in for an appointment to talk through everything and take all their instructions. Or they can just email me. So my work one would be edward@adewills.co.uk. And then I will, again, go through any questions they have on mind and anything of bother with their pets, and I can help them go through it all.
Amazing. I will add your details into the show notes so that if anyone's listening and wants to see those written down, they'll be in the description so that they can get in touch with you. And do you work nationwide, or are you locally based only? Can you do it online anywhere?
Yeah, of course, definitely all across the nation. We've got loads up north, down south, east, west, everywhere. Wherever you know, you can,
amazing,
across the jurisdiction, we can help via Zooms. But of course, in Bucks, Aylesbury, even in Oxfordshire, anywhere around. If you need home visits, because we understand it's accommodating to needs, more than happy to do home visit wills and come to the house and sit down, meet the dog, as we do. We'd love to do that, and get the will in place as well.
That's the extra perk of the dog. If you do of the job, if you do home visits, you get to have a fuss and a cuddle with the dogs as well.
That's why I like to.
Amazing.
Brilliant.
Brilliant. It's been fabulous talking to you and finding out a little bit more about how we can include our pets in our wills to make sure that they are looked after in the future.
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us.
No, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. It's really lovely to be here and lovely chatting with you, Debbie. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Dynamic Dog Owner with me, Debbie Potter. See you next time.